From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people of the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Sandra Cisneros looks ahead to her literary homecoming.
The country's in such a state of fear that madmen can manipulate a vote. I don't know what's going to happen, but I have the feeling things are going to get worse before they get better. Especially in Texas, you know, when you look at how the women's rights, the work that was done for women's rights and for Mexican Americans, you know, all that, and we've seen in the last 20 years things go from worse to worse.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Sandra Cisneros, this reluctant icon of the literary arts, left San Antonio after over 20 years of calling this city her home. She found a new sanctuary in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, a community known for its enclave of artists from around the world. Sandra returns to San Antonio this month for a series of readings at Gemini Inc. She's been back to the city many times, though, but this will mark her literary homecoming. Yvette Benavides spoke to Sandra Cisneros from her home in Mexico.
Is there something that you miss the most about San Antonio?
No. I don't miss anything about San Antonio because I come back often enough. I have been coming back actually like about four times a year, so I don't really feel like I left. If I miss something like a breakfast taco or a meal at the Liberty Bar, I'm there enough times that I'm kind of like a visiting tourist now, which gives me a really nice status. I come in. I haven't been able to come in at leisure. I've come in for doctor visits or I've got to close up a storage unit, so I haven't been able to see my friends, and that's been kind of hard. So when I come in, it's, you know, all right, got to get that storage unit out, and it's like July. We got to, like, work like dogs. So I can't say I miss San Antonio because I'm there a lot.
I see.
You know, I come in and out. I'm not always there at my own. I'm never there at my own schedule. I'm always there with some doctor visit or something that has a deadline. So it's always too rushed. I don't get to see everybody I want to see. And I want to publicly say that I've not been avoiding people or not been able to sign their books because I've been living with one foot in each country right now, and that's, you know, I haven't picked up my foot yet and said, okay, I'm completely in the other country until now.
So coming back to San Antonio, you're not coming back to your house.
No, I'm not coming back to my house. I haven't even seen my house since I've been back. Since I left, since I locked up the door and got in the cab, I have not been back to my house.
Does it feel weird to come back and know that you don't have a house to come back to?
No, because I figured something out. I stay at the same hotel, which I enjoy very much, and it's off the beaten path, and I feel like a tourist now when I come in. I really like it because one of the things when you live there that San Antonio doesn't realize, it has open arms for tourists and visitors, but it's not so open when someone comes from someone else and moves in. And that's the thing. You know, people are very charming and welcoming if you're just a visitor. But if you come and move in, and this is the sad thing. We don't take care of our artists. We just kind of take them for granted, especially if they're from somewhere else. You're always reminded that you're not Texan, even if you live there 20-something years. So I feel like I get better hospitality, reception, and embraced by San Antonio now that I don't live there. I figured it out. I figured out that the way to be welcomed in San Antonio is to just come for a visit. Well, I think that's something that San Antonians maybe don't want to admit, that there's, and I understand it, there's a very deep-seated territorialism and suspicion of strangers, which unfortunately, you know, anybody who's moved there from somewhere else, it takes a long time to make roots. And I did have roots in San Antonio for a time, but it's a very tribal town. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have family or your tribe, if that tribe may be your church or, maybe your sexuality or your profession, if you don't have those connections, it's very easy to become a tumbleweed. And I felt that I had roots finally. I'd found my home in the 90s. But, you know, those roots dried up when some of my tribe, you know, we grew in different directions. Some people moved away. And even though I knew a lot of people, you know, there are very few people I could call in the middle of the night if I was having a crisis. And most people came to me to ask them to help them. I very rarely had people that asked me, what could I do to help you?
And I guess in San Miguel de Allende, there's none of that, right? I mean, I feel like...
Well, I don't know. I have different kinds of friends. I have people that are very accomplished, but people come and go here. It's kind of an oasis. You have lots of people from extraordinary walks of life globally. I think there's more of a global community.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't like, you know, don't mess with San Miguel. It's like, you know, we're welcome that the people from Berlin are here, and we're so happy that Canadians are here, and we're so... Hey, there's a kind of openness of an international community that is vitalizing and, as I say in my book, doing good and bad, but there are a lot of people doing good here, and a lot of activists, a lot of artists of an international caliber. So the work is more international as opposed to regional. And I like that it's a small town but with an international vision. In San Antonio, you have a big town but a very small town vision.
And what do you think about, so from your vantage point there in Mexico, what have you thought about the news in the United States about the presidential election?
I've been very frustrated with United States politics since the fall of the towers. You know, so I just feel that things, especially from people who are immigrants or people who are of Mexican descent, even in San Antonio, where you have people that have been there for 13 generations of Mexican descent, that there's a climate of extreme xenophobia and extreme gynophobia, all the phobias you can think it of, because I really think we're living in such a climate globally of fear. But especially that fear is being nurtured and fomented by politicians in the United States. And it's heartbreaking to me. I feel very betrayed as someone who has voted for 41 years. And I just feel destroyed. Destroyed is the word I feel by politicians and where we are in our lack of vision. And I really have to look at other places, you know, people that are more far-ranging. And you know, I found allies in strange places. So, you know, at my age, kind of surprised that I feel so excited about things the Pope says. And, you know, I'm not Catholic, and I'm excited about the Pope. I don't agree with everything the Pope says, but, you know, he's got a lot of courage to say what he says and to be focusing on the poor and immigrants. And to be, you know, the kind of man that I think Cesar Chavez defines as someone who defends the weak. And we've become so corporate and so money conscious in the United States. That to me is so obvious as I come back. You know, I have dual citizenship, so I can come and I feel that sense of materialism and that sense of miedo, that fear that you feel when you cross the border immediately. Which is not to say that Mexico isn't have its corruption too, but at least people here are aware of their corruption and the hypocrisy of politicians. I think people are still dewy and starry-eyed and still believe that what the politicians tell them in the United States. And I think that the gente here have gotten so fastidiada, so frustrated that they just believe in their own power of organizing themselves.
There was such a palpable, beautiful energy on the news items that I watched about the Pope in Mexico last month. Did that reach you in San Miguel as well? Were people excited?
No, I don't know. I was out of town that weekend. I was traveling. I was at a bus station in Querétaro, and there was a big poster of life-size picture of the Pope, which I took pictures of myself and put on my Instagram account. So people thought I had met the Pope, but I only met his life-size poster at the Querétaro bus station. And there were three elderly ladies waiting to get their bus tickets, and I took pictures, selfies of me and the Pope. And then I looked over my shoulder; they were all frozen and lying and watching me take pictures of me and the Pope. And I took pictures at, like, I'm looking up at, smiling at the Pope with great admiration. And they just looked at me, and I just looked at them and smiled and walked away. Me and the Pope would be in agreement about some things. But life is kind of astonishing, you know. You find yourself at the different allies. You know, not to say that there's things, of course, that I disagree with the Pope, but I really like his courage. And it's people's spiritual power. They're going to be able to get the press from madmen, you know, because I really think we're living in a time that reminds me of Berlin in the early 30s, where, you know, the country's in such a state of fear that madmen can manipulate a vote. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I have the feeling things are going to get worse before they get better. Especially in Texas, you know, when you look at how the women's rights, the work that was done for women's rights and for Mexican Americans, you know, all that, and we've seen in the last 20 years things go from worse to worse. So it's a frightening time. I'm a big supporter of Planned Parenthood of Texas. I continue to support them. I just think that it's a horrible time to be living in the United States. If you're a woman or a poor person or a person of color, or even if you happen to be come from a family that was there before the United States is the United States, if you look like you might be a foreigner, you're treated like it's not your home anymore. And that's a frightening time. You know, I expected my lifetime that things were going to get better. I didn't realize that the word Mexican was going to become a bad word, that we would be the lowest rung, you know, lower than African Americans. And even African Americans discussing about themselves have to agree that, you know, the Mexicans are on the bottom.
Why now? What is this about?
I really think that people, you know, there's a backlash against all of the civil rights movements that happen, and people feel frightened about losing and sharing power. It's about sharing power. And, you know, it's about sharing power from someone different than you. And I think people who have been poor or have been at the bottom, you've always had to make accommodations. You've always had to go through great losses. Immigrants have seen their whole world disrupted, and kind of spiritual 9/11s happen in their homelands, in their lives, so they've had to adapt and survive. But I think that the United States has been very coddled from that reality, and people feel frightened about losing what they have and not being able to share it. And whereas, you know, the reality is that the person that's most able to adapt and survive and make our country strong would be an immigrant. That's what we should vote for. And, you know, the children of immigrants, it's horrible to see how they've forgotten and suddenly become, vilify other immigrants. Mm-hmm. That's a frightening thing to see. You would think that they would honor their ancestors and have compassionate and generous hearts. That's why I like the Pope. You know, he merely remembers the most powerless and defends them. And because he is the Pope, he has the press and the credibility. Mm-hmm. We need leaders like that. You know, we need leaders like that. I really wish that the world leaders, Thich Nhat Hanh is ill, you know, he's not a place to speak, and that we could have the peacemakers that would be in positions to speak in this time, people who have witnessed their families killed and had to emigrate like Rigoberta Menchú did, you know, that we should be looking to them for advice. And I don't think one person, I really have lost faith in the political system in the United States. I'm not voting anymore. I just feel absolute, you know, I know this is a blasphemous thing to say as a Mexican person, but, you know, I voted Democrat for 41 years, and where are we? So if anyone asks me that, I'll say, I already gave you my vote 41 years. Anybody else, if you were working for me, you'd be fired by now. Wouldn't I be a fool to vote for you one more time? Okay. There's my answer. And I'm not going to vote for the Republicans. I'm not mad. And I'm not going to throw away my vote for an independent. So the whole system to me just doesn't work.
You're listening to Texas Matters, a conversation between Yvette Benavides and author Sandra Cisneros.
Sandra, your papers are in the Literary Archives at Texas State University in San Marcos.
Yes.
So when you come back to Texas later on in the month, are you planning to stop there by chance?
Yes. Not this time because they're closed, but see, this is why I don't miss Texas, because I come back all the time. I'm always there. And, you know, I may not be seen. Maybe I'm, you know, boxing up books and donating them, or maybe I'm busy at San Marcos, but it seems like I haven't left, you know, so I just keep coming back all the time. I know I have a home in Texas. I don't feel like I've left the physical home on along the river because I didn't feel safe there, but I don't feel that I don't have a home in Texas. I feel I have many places that I love going to and hanging out with and seeing people. And now I have a new home in San Marcos, which makes me really happy because I feel that the university there respects my work and respects me as a writer while I'm alive, not while I'm dead. And I can't say that for all Texas institutions. You know, I can't say that. So I'm really thrilled that, you know, that I'll be coming back and that they're doing such a lovely job of organizing things and displaying them and putting them in order and helping me find things because some of my essays were lost. They found them. And, you know, so it's great. I can't feel I've left Texas in the way I've left my house, but I haven't left my home.
San Antonio will be celebrating their 300th, the tricentennial in 2018. So 300 years of history in San Antonio. So this is a question that's pretty involved, but just off the top of your head, what do you think are some of the historical events? Like, whose history is it in San Antonio? What are some of the historical things that you think we need to remember and value?
I think one of the things that really needs to happen is that the white people in San Antonio need to be admit that they have Mexican blood in their ancestry. White people in San Antonio are like ashamed to admit that their grandmother was Mexican or that their name is Soledad, but their last name is Anglo, because they're Mexican, that we're a fusion of cultures. We need to stand up and say that and say this is a community that, thanks to the Alamo, is a birthplace of intermarriage. And especially now, there should not be this kind of apartheid that exists in San Antonio community. We should say we are a town that we have Anglo and Irish and Scottish and German and Mexican blood, all of us, and, you know, and African-American ancestry and indigenous ancestors. That's who we are, and that makes San Antonio very special and unique. If San Antonio, if the people in positions of power would admit that, and, you know, it's there in our DNA. If it was recognized, that would give San Antonio such a place of distinction in Texas. But that's a cradle for a fusion of cultures, which in the new millennium we're going to need, because we're going to have to be ambassadors building bridges, not building walls, to counter the fearful, small-minded, frightened politicians of the world. We really need that, people to speak up and say, you know what, my ancestor was a slave, and I know I look Irish, but I also have Mexican grandmother. You know, that needs to be acknowledged.
So you encountered that, people who just couldn't come clean about
who
they really are?
A lot in San Antonio, yeah.
And so you think that there's an apartheid in San Antonio?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God, yes.
So
I think it's the worst part about San Antonio is its colonialism isn't acknowledged. If it's not acknowledged, then you don't, you know, if you don't know you have a problem, then how are you going to fix it?
How to fix it?
Well, I think everybody needs to study their ancestry. Mm-hmm. We need to take the symbols of San Antonio out of the hands of people that are frightened. So the daughters of the Texas Revolution cannot tell the story the way they did it. They are telling it. You know, I think that the symbol of a story can either empower or disempower a community. And I think that you have to look at the Alamo, for example. It was a chapel. Mm-hmm. It was a chapel. And it was the birthplace. It shouldn't be memorialized for war. It should be memorialized for what that peace brought, and how those communities came together, that were warring with each other. What a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. They were warring with each other, and then there was intermarriages and families, and San Antonio grew from that. So the story of the war is not the end of the story. And if you choose to look at it like as a victim, then you're only going to be instilling a story of retribution and violence and hatred. So it's only part of the story. It's one chapter. And the story continues, and it continues now, and it's a living story now.
And Sandra, you took part in that PBS program, Finding Your Roots, which
yes.
the episode aired very recently. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, my. Well, it was exciting, and I wish I'd had more of the footage. I really got angry that they didn't just have me and Glory on the show, because I thought we matched better than the third actor that I didn't feel had very much to do with us. I felt so thrilled to have the names of the woman ancestors, and to say their names was like saying a prayer, because who gets forgotten in one generation, two generations? You know, you lose your grandmother's and mother's last names. You know, you don't even know who they are. And in three generations, forget it. So I was so beautiful, especially on my mother's side of the family, who's indigenous. We have all this indigenous blood, to be able to name them, to say their names, just to say their names to me. These anonymous women was so powerful for me. It was like I was moved to tears. And, you know, just to say their names out loud. It's why in the Descanso portion of my book, I put so many of my relatives, because mm-hmm. I felt like they're never going to be in a book.
Was that the highlight for you, the names?
The highlight was the name when they wow. gave me the my big poster with the names of these
yeah.
women. And I could see my men, too, but I was so thrilled, because on my mom's side, we're talking about illiterate indigenous women who mm-hmm. wrote not with a pencil, but just with maybe a needle or a thread or a loom. You know, these were the women that were very, very poor. And we're talking about women that didn't even grow up in towns. It wasn't even a town. They grew up in little ranchitos. So I was, I felt their presence. I felt them in the room. And I told that to Skip. And also, what was missing is that Skip and I got along really well. I'm grateful. I don't want to be Ben Affleck and criticize. I'm very grateful for what I got. I'm grateful. I could not have paid for that research. In fact, I owe a letter to Dr. Gates, and I solved some of the mystery, because my father had an assumed name by a San Antonio man, a man from San Antonio identity who wound up in Soledad prison, had my father use his identity to enter the United States. But I found out from my uncle that it was very common to buy papers from people in Nuevo Laredo. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'd get the papers from your relatives or from kin, or sometimes you'd buy them from nefarious folks like this Ismael Regalado, who regaló sus papeles to my father. And my father assumed that identity for many years. I don't know why he didn't just confess when he got enlisted, or conscripted, rather. But there's a story that my father did not tell us. And, you know, I had to dig and do a little bit of archaeology after the show to find out, who is this person? How did my father get those papers? And, you know, and my uncle said, well, I don't know about him, but I know I bought my papers. So that makes sense, because this, we're talking about the worst part of World War II, where there were the most casualties and very few men on the streets. And so it was very easy to get conscripted during that time.
What a name, Regalado.
Regalado, right?
That could be in your next story.
I couldn't make that stuff up. It's too good. If I put it in a book, people would say, oh, no, that's not, you know, she made that up. Yeah. But see, that's how you know it's true.
Yeah.
You know.
That's
so
great.
That part I need to follow up to Dr. Gates and tell him what my research has done. I was sorry that we didn't have more of the tribes of here in Guanajuato, of my mother's ancestry, because during the colonial period there was such an obsession about racial purity. So you had the casta paintings, you know, if you lobo marries a mulata, you will have a, you know, they would have different names. But, you know, for the indigenous people, if you were poor and indigenous, you were just indígena. Mm-hmm. They didn't say you're Otomi or you're Chichimeca or whatever. That's just, you know, so I don't, but they did do the DNA breakdown, and, you know, I was really happy that I haven't examined it, because I haven't seen it yet. It's been held for me by my San Antonio assistant, mm-hmm. So I can see what indigenous tribes make up my blood.
Wow.
That's so thrilling.
That's
so thrilling. I think everybody should do for the tricentennial to take a DNA test. And, you know, maybe the Institute of Texas Culture should offer a free DNA test, because I think if people looked at their ancestry, then there wouldn't be this division and there'd be more peacemaking.
Wow, what an idea.
Right? Okay, put it out there.
Okay,
it out there to San Antonio.
There it is.
And to the daughters, especially of the Texas Revolution. Do your DNA, and maybe you'll tell the story in a different way, because you'll understand that the story doesn't end at the Alamo. The story begins at the Alamo.
Wow. That's a plan.
Yes, I would love if DNA tests were given away at the Alamo, if people would look at the ancestry and look at their ancestry and say, there isn't an us them, it's we are here, and from this battle, this was Tapple created so much spirit and a community of intermarriage and of communities converging and coming together to create ourselves.
I think part of what we can celebrate for San Antonio's last 300 years is something like Macondo and something like Gemini Inc., these two institutions in San Antonio that promote the work of writers. What do you think?
I want to thank Gemini Inc. for inviting me as a guest, because I think we take for granted our local writers. I think it's important to continue to think of San Antonio as a literary town and to create that literary community. There's a lot of artists. We know visual artists, there's a lot of musicians, but we have to remember there's this new time. It's a literary town, and it has been a literary town since before I got there, but it's nice to remember and nurture it so that people don't have to leave, so we don't have to leave Texas to continue to be writers. I feel very happy here. And I do have raices here from centuries ago, from one century ago and beyond. So I feel very connected to the land, and here it's kind of funny and hilarious to say this, but I feel safer in San Miguel than I do in San Antonio.
Well, I'm so glad you're happy.
Yeah, you know, for now, I don't know, you know, I never thought I'd leave Texas, so I don't know if I'll be here forever, but for right now, this is my home, and I hope it's going to allow me to do more international work, larger work. Mm-hmm. I really feel that that's next phase in my life, and I look forward to being of service to Mexico and to the Frontera, because that work never stops for us as writers. You know, one of our 10 times 10 as Mexican-American writers is that we live in multiple worlds. And as such, we have to be of service, especially in times of crisis like now.
Sandra Cisneros is a MacArthur Genius Award Fellow. She is the author of The House on Mongo Street, Woman Hollering Creek, My Wicked, Wicked Ways, Carmamello, and most recently, A House of My Own. She will be in San Antonio at the end of March for a series of events sponsored by Gemini Inc. For more information, go to their website, GeminiInc.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org, or you can write directly on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs, and you can also find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.